Welcome to Make the Grade with the Success Doctor, Stephen Green, where you'll discover actionable strategies to help your student to reach their academic goals, to excel at standardized testing, and to plan for the college admissions process painlessly. And now, here's your host, Dr. Stephen Green.
All right. Hello, everybody. Good evening. Buenos Aires. I'm speaking foreign language, and you know why? Because we have an incredible guest on tonight. We have Katarina Van Riet, and I hope I'm saying it right. She is coming to us all the way, other side of the ocean, other side of the pond, as they say sometimes. She's going to tell us all about teaching English in a foreign country. Really, really, really interesting. I've had some great conversations there. I'm very excited about this. But hold the phone for a second. I got a couple quick hits I want to get into. Number one, a lot of schools, and I'm getting a lot of questions about this. Okay, a lot. I'm going to get into it too much tonight, but check out my live tomorrow. It'll probably be around lunchtime. A lot of schools are going back next week on a half day, a half admission, Monday, Thursday, Tuesday, Friday. Is it going to work? Is it a good idea? Is it a great way for my kid to learn? These are questions parents are asking me, okay? And honestly, I'm taking a wait-and-see mindset, okay? I'm not going to say it's not going to work because I think it can. I'm not going to say it's going to work for sure because it may not. But what I'm going to say is let's give it time. Let's give the teachers a chance to feel this out. Let's get the students a chance to feel this out, and let's see if it's going to work. Now, the fly in the ointment is if some big surge of positivity cases are happening, which nobody wants ever anywhere, and that causes, you know, some of the schools to get infected and, you know, things like this, and we don't want that. So let's just disqualify that from the conversation. So my opinion is this. I think school, kids get that. That's what they're used to. That's the structure they're accustomed to. The way this teaching is going to happen, I think, is something the teachers are going to have to get used to. So I think everybody just has to be a little bit patient. I, as always, am here to support what's going on. I'm here to support you, families, parents, students. This event sponsored by the Success Community. If you need help 24/7, get to the Success Community, makethegrade.community. Imagine that. So let's do this. Without any further ado, I want to introduce our guest. It is like 7 o'clock. She's been up all night to attend this live. This is live. This is completely live, right? So it is 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, 2:03 in the morning there where you are. Let's confirm that, right? Where I am, it's a nice even 8 o'clock. So first of all, thank you very much for doing that. So let me introduce my guest, Katarina. So you are in Holland, right?
Yes.
Which city?
In Utrecht.
Utrecht. Now, where is that exactly? That our audience would, is it near Amsterdam?
Yes, near Amsterdam. It's sort of plumb in the middle.
Okay, so I'm sure it's a beautiful city. Most cities in Europe are. So let's start out this way. I want the audience to learn a little bit about you. So why don't you just tell us how you got into education? Maybe what your background is a little bit. What's your favorite color? what's your favorite meal or dessert? I don't know. Just a little human interest stuff. And then we're going to get into some. I got a whole list of. Look at this. Look at that. I got a whole list of discussion topics tonight because we got a lot to get into. So tell us a little bit. How'd you get into education? Give me a little history here.
Well, actually, my entire family is in education. So both my parents were primary school teachers when they were still working. So I sort of grew up thinking that being a teacher would be this really cool job. And when I was in secondary school, I just decided I wanted to be an English teacher because I think English is such a beautiful language. And then I studied English at Utrecht University and sort of stuck around here. And I've been teaching for 8 years now, I think.
Interesting. You know, both my parents were teachers too, so we're like brothers from another mother. As they say here in the United States, I got all kinds of slang. So you decide, and listen, let me tell you something. And I don't want to offend anybody here, but most people don't usually call English a beautiful language. In America, we sort of think of beautiful things like French, you know, something very romantic or something. But I love it. It's great. A fan. So why English? Why not German? Why not French? Why not Spanish? Why not Greek? I don't know. Why not Slovakian? Why not Armenian? Or Japanese? Why English? What was the draw?
Well, I think Japanese is also a really beautiful language.
Okay.
I'm not sure why English. It might have been the literature, because there's so many great books written in English. I mean, take Dickens, for example, is brilliant. Mm-hmm. But mainly, I also think it's what you can do with a language. It's so versatile. And I think I sort of fell in love with that aspect of it.
Interesting. How many languages can you speak fluently?
Oh, I don't know about fluently. I suppose Dutch and English would have. My German's not bad.
Okay, not bad. It's probably 1,000 times better than mine.
Well, we have to learn Deutsch. A lot of languages in Ireland because it's such a tiny country. We have to learn all of them.
There you go. Eine Bier for me. So 8 years ago you started teaching English. So tell me about, the audience here, my audience here, are typically parents who have children in school. And what we push here is ways they can help their children progress more with their education, actions they could take. So how does your school work? What's your format? Is it one-on-one? Is it a classroom? Is it live? Are you doing it through video? What's the circumstance there at this point?
Well, at this point, almost everything's online because in the Netherlands as well, we're dealing with COVID. So most of our classes are actually taught online through either Microsoft Teams or sometimes Zoom. Mm-hmm. We used to work a lot face-to-face, obviously, and then we mostly teach groups. And our main target audience are students in higher education. So usually they're not university students, but I'm not. The Dutch educational system is a bit different.
What would their age be? How old?
18 to 24.
So here we would call them a college student or a university level. Okay. Is that because the demand for people to learn English is high?
Yes. Yes, because Netherlands is making or has made the switch from higher education being taught in Dutch to actually higher education, everything being taught in English.
Really?
So there's a very high demand.
Who decided that? The government or the schools? Or it wasn't a vote. Was it a vote?
No, it wasn't a vote, although we're quite big on them. I think officially it's the government who decided, but I think unofficially it might have been the universities who saw this big opportunity there, because if you teach everything in English, then you get this huge influx from foreign students. So I think that's mainly the reason.
Wow. Let me ask you this, because I don't like to generalize, but I think this is true. The average American probably speaks English, and maybe because they had it in high school or something, is a little dabbles in another language. Whereas I think the typical European or Asian or whatever, fluent, you know, typically 2-3 languages they just learned throughout their whole life. So it just hasn't been a focus of our educational system. But what would you say if somebody wants to learn another language? What advice would you give them? What tips would you give? Like, what's your secret? You know, what's your secret sauce here to teaching English? But let's apply that sort of in reverse. Somebody who knows English is trying to learn another language.
So sometimes I teach Dutch. And then it also depends, like, are you just picking up the language or are you like a full beginner? Do you already know something or are you going from an intermediate level to an advanced level? But I think what generally works well is immersion, and that you can, so really just taking the language and making sure that that language is all around you. So easy stuff that you can do at home, for example, if you're trying to learn French, is set Facebook to French or Instagram to French, and then or your phone or Windows or whatever you're using, Mac. And for a while, that will be really disorienting because everything will be in that language. But I mean, familiar with how that tool works anyway, so it's okay, and you can sort of I can use it. So making sure that that language is all around you is actually a really good method of sort of picking up the language without you actually noticing it. And something else that you can do, for example, when you're learning new vocabulary, We all remember learning vocabulary at school if we've taken a second language, and you have to learn these lists of words. It's pretty boring.
Right.
But something that you can do is putting them on a post-it, for example. And now, because everyone's working from home, you often have this office space, so you can put all these post-its around your desktop or your laptop, for example. And you can sort of cheat and look at them, and they're always sort of near you. So I like to think it's osmosis. And you just sort of, well, you're like a sponge.
Well, if you think about it, how does anybody learn any language, right? I think, 99% of the time from their parents, right? And the parents don't use a book. It's not like they're sitting there with a book saying, "Hey, little Steve," you know. And it's a natural absorption, right? You hear it, and then you just repeat it, and eventually you figure out what the words mean. And you know, typically by the time somebody's 4 or 5, you know, they're basically able to speak. They can understand, they can comprehend, they make sentences. I know they say, you know, if you can learn a language by the time you're 12 or 10, you know, your brain is just so ready for it. It's much harder when you're older. But what your students, what is their main motivation for learning? Is it, here we go. Let's welcome my friend Ron Shapiro here. He's got a, are you familiar with this? The Zazen Shans. I don't know what that is, but
yep.
Ron is a very cultured guy. Ron Shapiro is one of my sponsors in, my event here, and he's a good guy. He's got a great program. But thank you, Ron. But with your students, with your caseload, what is their typical motivation? Is it to get a job? Is it so they can come study in your country? Is it both? Is it, I don't know, they want to marry a person who speaks English? Maybe, I don't know. But what would you say are their motivations?
Well, usually they're in school, so not really married.
not yet.
I mean, sometimes, you never know.
It's okay. Stay single. Stay single, guys. Go ahead.
But usually the primary reason is that they want to be able to follow courses better and be able to write better essays, for example. And the students that we teach are generally students who are studying at a conservatory, for example, or theater and dance. So it's all these sort of artsy studies. And what you see there is that they really, they sort of need the language to also express themselves in daily life and to communicate with their teachers and their fellow students, for example. So that's really important. And what's also really important for them is this really specific vocabulary, almost jargon. So we try and be ultra specialized and figure out what exactly these students need. So for example, conservatory students really focus on musical English. And then try and create a lesson material around that.
So when you say conservatory, I think you're like a person who maybe from Russia or something who's a violin player. You're talking about music conservatory, right?
Yes.
A question. Is there any, do you find who, depending on the native language someone speaks, like, let me ask it a different way. If someone's native language is, say, French, is it easier for them to learn English than somebody whose native language is a completely different, like Greek or, you know, something that's a completely Japanese or Chinese, that's just a very different the whole, like, sounds and stuff, you know, are different. Like, French, English and French overlap, obviously. So is that easier? Is that easier for you to teach? Is it easier for the student to learn?
It's a complicated question.
We're at a very high level here.
I think it depends.
Okay.
So if someone's coming from French, obviously the jump to English isn't that big. So if they speak French, if they only speak French and they learn English, and you compare that to someone who only speaks Japanese and they learn English, then the person from France is going to have it easier, obviously.
Okay.
In lots of cases. I mean, it also depends, of course, how good is somebody at picking up a language. But generally, I would say yes. But if you have someone from Japan who's already learned 6 other languages, and English is going to be their 7th, then the person from Japan is going to have a definite advantage. So something that we also look at and something that we ask in intake interviews, for example, is how many other languages do you already speak? So how familiar are you with the idea of the concept of picking up another language?
Mm-hmm. Now, walk us through what a class would be. How long is it? Do you have a set lesson plan? Is it individual? Is it groups? Is it once a week? What's your protocol here?
Well, the protocol for the types of lessons that just talked about.
That's, so I come to you and say, I'm going to say this in Russian, right? Which I'm trying to say is, I need to learn English, right? I'm here. I need English, right? And you say, well, this is how we're going to teach it to you, right?
Yeah.
So what would be my options? What options could I have as a student?
So usually it's group lessons for 2 hours once a week. That's just a regular format. And then now obviously they're online and you would get some homework in between. And that's basically what we do. But sometimes you get students or just people in general, like business people who really need to pick up the language really quickly. And then we say, you know, 3 times a week, really the heavy, heavy intensive course. So it really depends also on how fast do you want to go, how much do you want to learn, what's your time frame basically, and how much time do you have for homework?
Can somebody, in your experience, be competent with the language in 2 months, 6 weeks, a month? What's the minimum amount of time you think it takes? I know that's a difficult question to give an exact answer to, but is there a record? Like, what's the fastest you ever saw somebody go from nothing to at least conversant?
That's a good one. I'm not sure. Maybe a month from
that's
zero
pretty quick. To like. Okay. And there's probably some people like me still struggling.
Generally they say like to pick up Dutch, if you're just, you know, an average person, you will take, they say, you know, there's like a number of hours, et cetera, but in a year you can basically pick it up. And I think most languages, that's the case.
I would think. Can you share some success stories you've had? Like maybe, you know, you don't have to name names or anything, but, you know, maybe some stories of this student came to me with this, and this is why, you know, like a case study, we would call it here.
Well, actually, I think the most interesting success story is not one of my students, but one of a group of students that my business partner, Tay, taught. They're a family, and I think it's really interesting because it's mum and dad and their son. And they had like group lessons, sort of, but with a little group of three because that's the family. Mm-hmm. And the parents are both academics, and they're really interested in philosophy, but also technology, IT, and the son as well. And my business partner created all these lessons around all the things that they really found very interesting. And I think in 6 months' time, they went from zero to B2 and at B2 level. You can have like interesting conversations. Nuanced, you can give your opinion on difficult topics, but they were discussing philosophy and stuff and writing essays. And I thought that was amazing.
Do you, this is something I always thought is hard, is it's one thing to learn kind of textbook language, right? But then you go somewhere and the natives have a lot of slang. There's a lot of colloquialisms. There's a fancy word. I'm sure you know that because you're very smart. But which is difficult for a person who kind of has a book knowledge, right? So I go, I learn whatever, Dutch, and I learn it kind of right by the book, right? This is it. And I go, I'm out on the street walking around, and somebody's using a bunch of slang, and now I'm like right back where I started. Is that part of your instruction at all?
Yes. Yeah. This is I think in general, you have languages that where the written form and the spoken form are actually very close together. And then there's languages where the two are completely distinct. So
yes.
I'm dabbling in Farsi a little, like that's what they speak in Iran. Mm-hmm. And then there the two are completely different. Hmm. But in Dutch, they're actually quite similar, but you can still sound a bit funny. Done it from a book. So we definitely pay attention to that. And some of these course books in Dutch, for example, they say, you know, they have these sentences that you would never use in real life, and we just skip them, and we just tell our students, don't say this, sounds weird, everybody says this, and we actually teach them the language that people actually use and that you could use in, for example, the supermarket.
Yeah, I remember, I'll tell you a little story. My kids were little, we had an au pair from Germany. And anyway, she was only here a few days. And we said, my children's friends are going to come over. And his last name is Grossman. Well, Grossman in German means big person, right? Well, he comes over, he's a 6-year-old kid. he's 3 feet tall. So she thought we were playing a trick on her because we said he's coming over. This is so-and-so Grossman. She thought we were saying a big man is coming over. Meanwhile, this little kid came over and she got all upset because she thought we were making fun of her, which wasn't the case. But it's just funny how, you know, sometimes things, people are very literal, you know, and sometimes people aren't. But we said, no, it's really true. That's his name. He's a little person. He just has a name of a big person. So slang is it part of it, right? I remember the same au pair. We said, you know, we were trying to tell her what cool means, right? Which is a big English American thing. And cool literally means like not warm, right? Like, you know, whatever. My cup has cool liquid in it. Well, the slang is like acceptable, like something that you want to be involved in, like it's cool to learn English or whatever. So it's hard for people to get around that a little bit. Have you been to the United States? Have you ever lived in a country where English was the actual primary native language?
Yeah, I lived in London for a bit.
So you have kind of an English accent a little bit, but is that how, do most Dutch, I hope this is an offensive question, but do most Dutch people who speak English have the same accent that you do? Or is yours seems a little more English, you know, like London, England-ish a little bit?
I would say most people actually have more of an American accent.
Really?
That I can't do. Well, they sound really Dutch. Our prime minister is famous for this because he would always sound like this whenever he would give a press conference. And that's basically a Dutch accent.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So interesting. The whole language thing, you know, it's something you can never get away from because everybody has to communicate unless you can't speak. And yet we take it for granted. You know, everybody just assumes language is just so easy and natural until you run into somebody that doesn't speak your same language. And then it becomes such a struggle. I just find it so fascinating. Let me ask you a few more questions. Let's talk about online learning. Okay. And I don't know if you heard my intro. But the biggest concern I get from parents right now, can my child learn online? Can they learn effectively online? And we've already established that your classes are online now. How's that going for you? Is it effective? Are the students having any sort of challenge? And your students are a little bit older, so I'd assume somewhat more adaptable. But what's your experience teaching online?
Well, I would always prefer face-to-face groups because especially when you're learning a language, it's sort of, people don't only speak the words, they also like to gesture, for example, that's the body language, and it's much more difficult to also sort of get that when you're teaching online. So you're missing quite a bit of what makes communication. But we have to make do, and I think the teachers are also getting better because we're starting to learn how these tools work. And we're getting better at taking a large group of students, for example, and dividing them into smaller groups in these tools, having them sort of do these group exercises and then reporting back to the class. So all these useful tools that you learn as a teacher that you apply when you start teaching online, you don't have anything for it. You think, what am I going to do?
Is this affecting your business at all as a company? Do you find it's easier to deliver online? Is it harder? Do you prefer it? Not prefer it?
I think it has its advantages and disadvantages. What I really like is that you don't have traveling times anymore. You just, you know, yeah. You just go online and there you are. And that's, I think that's ideal.
So that's on the plus side.
Yes, definitely. But then
but you, then you give up the actual rapport, right?
So, yeah. But for our business, it's quite good. And we were actually really lucky because I'm a bit of an IT nerd. I like computers. I like messing around with them. So before the pandemic started, I think this was November last year, I said to my business partner, like, hey, I would like to create an online learning environment. I've worked with Moodle before. I'm just going to install something on our server because I also do the website and everything. And I just had a field day just playing around with Moodle, and I created an online environment.
Moodle, by the way, if you don't know, is like an online learning platform.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great. And then we had that, but we didn't really think we were going to do anything with it, like in the short term.
Well, you cursed then, yourself by thinking that.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, but then we already had this, so we could take it straight away. So I think we only lost 1 week of lessons when the quarantine here started, and then we were up and running again. So that was ideal.
Do you think you'd be just as successful anywhere? I mean, you're in Holland, but if you were, I don't know, if you were set up in Rome, would you have the same demand, or Moscow, or is your location helping you to drive your popularity as an instructor?
I don't have any experience with these other markets. So I'm
hypothetically,
not
quite sure. We're just, but I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
But I do think what really helped is when you're Dutch and you grew up here, right? So you know the ins and outs, you know what people are like, and then you've lived in this other country as well, and you can sort of contrast the different languages, but also the different cultures. Mm-hmm. I think that makes a huge difference. So I don't think I'd be very successful teaching English in Rome, for example, because I mean I think people would prefer a native speaker. They do so anyways. Mm. But yeah, in the Netherlands also, because we need English to communicate with all our neighbors who are much bigger than us. So I think there's a huge demand here, yeah.
It's a destination. So people are coming there as a destination, right? They want to learn because I guess the schools are very high caliber. What do they do after that? So now let's talk about a graduate, right? So somebody stays with you a year. Now they're English masters, I don't know. Do they go back to their native countries? Do they stay there? Do they travel around the world? Do you keep any records of what your alumni are doing?
Sometimes we keep in touch. Yeah. I think it depends, which country, they're from. So I think if it's like a neighboring country, they often go back. So for example, Germany, they often go back for, UK, but also people also stay. I think it depends on whether you think that you're going to have better chances of finding a job here in the Netherlands, for example, than where you were living previously. And I also think it depends on the type of students. So if you're going to a music conservatory and you want to join an orchestra, for example, then it's mm-hmm. just whichever orchestra accepts you, and then you'll have to move to that country. So or right. if you want to be an academic, for example, it's just whichever university will accept you, that's where you go and live.
So in your life day to day, you're speaking English most of the time. You're speaking Dutch some of the time. I don't know if there's a third language that you're working in. Does that have any like effect on your, I don't know, your kind of personality or anything? Is it just you're so used to it, it doesn't matter? I remember we were on vacation in the Caribbean, in an island where it was Spanish. And the person who was in charge of volleyball game or something, but I'm fascinated by this. So they're like, hey guys, we're going to play volleyball. And then he would say the same sentence in Spanish. Then he would say the same sentence in French. Then he would say, okay, here's our rules. Then he would say it in Spanish and French. And it's just something I am unable to do even on any level at all. So I find it so amazing somebody has that sort of command to have that, you know, just on turning on a dime, just like that. But because you're able to do this, do you find it's hard, or is it just so natural for somebody who's able to do it?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I do notice, so I think I have a bit of, an advantage because I actually studied the language for 5 years, but which is also a disadvantage because when I, like from the age of 18 to like 23, I didn't really practice my Dutch at all. So my academic Dutch isn't that good. But I, yeah, so I can also switch like in a in mid-sentence. I can just go from Dutch to English. I do notice that there's always one dominant language. So if I'm speaking a lot of English day to day, then I will lose certain Dutch words and vice versa. But I do think that, I mean, Dutch will always be my, mother tongue and English will, my English will never be as good as my Dutch, I think. So I'm always a bit insecure about my English and I'm always sort of like wondering, oh, maybe I made a mistake here or maybe I didn't pronounce that right.
I think your English is better than mine in some ways.
This insecurity, like,
it's more textbook, you know, but
Plus, it's also like, so in Dutch, for example, I like Dutch because I can be quite creative with it and Dutch has certain mechanics which allow you to make new words really easily. And German has the same, for example. And so it allows you to play with words. That's really a lot of fun. But I don't want to do that in English because if I make word jokes in English, people often think that I'm making a mistake. So I've sort of let go of that.
Like Uberhausen or something. You can just put like little words together and make a giant word in German. Yeah, we don't really do that in English very well. Hey, this is Steve Green, my guest, Katrien van Riet, all the way from Holland, 2:30 in the morning there, blessing us with her brilliance, her command of these languages, and her skills. This is Education Life Thursday. We are here every week. We are here to help parents, help students, to help their children, to maximize their education, give you actions. A little bit different this week because this is a little more of a theoretical thing, but I am finding this so interesting. I'm really enjoying this. Two or three more questions for you, then we're going to let you go back to sleep. Number one, where do you think, and I ask everybody this because I don't know the answer to this. What do you think we've learned from this last 6-8 months of being shut in and having to transition to virtual, maybe 100%? What do you think is going to stick? What do you think we're still going to be doing even when we return to quote unquote normal? And what do you think the second people can meet face to face is never going to come back again? You have any opinion about that? Like I can tell you, I can tell you my world if it helps you. Mm-hmm. For years, I've been doing online tutoring and I've been doing online education for 8-9 years now to the point where the technology wasn't that great. Right now, I mean, look, we're, I don't know, how many miles is it to Holland or do you do kilometers or miles? Kilometers, probably.
Kilometers.
Okay. So it's, I don't know, we're 5,000 kilometers apart. I don't know. We got a beautiful connection. The sound's great. Video's great. Everybody's looking good. I was teaching online when you would say, "Hi, Katrien," and then we go, and then 4 seconds later, you would hear me, and then 10 seconds later, I'd hear your answer. The video was not great. You couldn't do whiteboards. You couldn't do anything like that. So it took me some time, and I almost had to sell the idea of being able to instruct online to a parent that it was worth the time than the cost to instruct their children that way. Well, the one good thing that's come out of this is that the buy-in on that and people's ability to say, yeah, this can be effective, especially one-on-one or in a group of two or three, which I do all day. And I just don't have to have the conversation anymore. Hey, we're going to meet on Zoom. We're going to meet on whatever platform we're going to use. Don't worry. It's going to be awesome. Oh, no, we know now. It's great. For 6-7 years, it was half the argument. You know, hey, don't worry. It's going to be fine. You know, you can test it out. So is there something like that you found in your situation that maybe you hadn't been doing before because people were resistant or they just didn't want to know that you might be able to use moving forward? Is there something that you think is going to change that way in a sort of long-term way?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the I think online teaching is here to stay, I guess, because the tools have just improved so much.
Yes, and the bandwidth, during the last internet months. Too.
Yeah, I mean, I also got a better internet connection, so I would be able to teach properly without bop. So I think that's just here to stay. And I think all the teachers have also learned how to actually use these different tools. And something that I've noticed with my own teaching is that I would see this as there's a thing.
Yeah, somebody comment.
Oh.
You know? Look at this 12-year-old putting us to shame. Thank you, Ron.
Indeed.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think online teaching is never going to go back. I think the acceptance of it, the technology, the ability to support it is very strong now. By the way, all of you out there listening, if you want to make a comment, ask a question, say something nice to us, that would be accepting. I think my last question, I probably could have 30 or 40 more. Share with us something, is there something unique about your country that, maybe Americans aren't aware of? This is really stereotypical, but we think Holland, we think tulips, we think Hans Christian Andersen. Was he? No, he was Danish, I think. Yeah, never mind. Was he Dutch?
No, he wasn't. No,
I think he was Danish.
We have Gruna. We have Miffy.
What is that?
Miffy is a little bunny rabbit. White. Really big in Japan, I think.
Interesting. So tulips, I think tulips, Dutch tulips, beautiful. But what is there something about your culture or something I'll give you a chance to share here that you're particularly proud of?
Oh, well, I think there's something really funny about Dutch culture. Because we learn all these languages here, we're really proud that we can speak all these languages, sort of. Mm-hmm. So whenever somebody has a bit of an accent in Dutch, we automatically switch to English and we try and accommodate them, but also maybe show off our English a little. So actually, people who come and move here find it very difficult to learn Dutch because nobody wants to speak Dutch with them. Just all these.
Wow, it's like a paradox.
English.
But let's move to Dutch and learn English. Let's move to Holland and learn English.
In social settings or like businesses, they have to speak English during the day, right? And then during drinks, they all go back to Dutch. And this one person who doesn't speak Dutch, who hasn't been able to learn Dutch, keeps switching to English. That person is left out from the conversation of all these Dutch people switching back to Dutch.
So everybody's sitting around having a glass of wine or whatever, or Heineken, right? Heineken, I'm probably very big in Holland, right? And you got the one guy over here who wants to speak Dutch, and everybody else, yeah, we don't want to deal with you. Incredible. Anything else you want to share? I mean, any other just ideas we haven't touched on or anything that you think are important for people to know about?
Oh, I don't know. I think we've been quite thorough.
I hope so. Hey, we got Ron. Ron is the comment king tonight. Thank you so much, Ron. He is.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for having me, Stephen.
I want to thank you, first of all, for getting up in the middle of the night or staying up till the middle of the night and coming on here. I also want to thank you for the good work that you're doing because I think one of the keys to being a good educator is to be passionate about what you do. If you don't love teaching, don't go into teaching, right? Because it's hard work. It can be frustrating. It can be also super, super rewarding. But you got to really love what you're doing. So anytime I meet an educator who's really all in with it and is just helping so many people, it doesn't matter what subject it is, doesn't matter what grade you are, what age it is, just the fact that we're bringing information to people and giving people value that way, I applaud. And I wanted to give you a platform to talk about that. Additionally, I think the whole language discussion is so interesting. Because it's challenging. If it was so easy to learn, everybody learn it in 5 minutes, that'd be the end of it, right? It's a lifelong, not lifelong, but it's a long-term pursuit. And but then again, I think one of the things you said, and we really haven't talked about that much, is the value once you learn it. So people invest in the process. They learn it from somebody like yourself. And now they have a skill they can use the rest of their lives in all kinds of different settings, whether it's professional or social or academic or what have you, and they're just better off. So, I think you're doing a fabulous service. If somebody was interested, probably our audience primarily English, but let's not take anything for granted, how would they get a hold of you? Do you have an email address or a website you want to share?
Oh, yeah. It's de-talgammer.nl, put it in the... because it's in Dutch.
Put it in the chat here, and I'll put it along the stream here. Type it in the chat, and I will... So your website is only in Dutch right now, you told me.
At the moment, yeah, that's my bad.
Oh, it's okay. I'm going to learn Dutch in the next 5 hours, so I'll be able to read it by tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it's very similar to German.
There you go. So, okay. Last thing, before we wrap up, anything just big coming up? Are you doing any sort of workshops or classes or just something that you'd want people to be aware of, you know, maybe they could tap into?
Oh, it's all in the Netherlands and they're all courses now. But we're working on this new online learning environment, which I think is going to be really cool. But it's for one of the schools, so it's not going to be public. Hopefully we'll have a public.
Interesting. One second. I just want to look up something. I got so many things going on here. One thing I need to, you say you are in pursuing a second degree in industrial design from the Eindhoven University of Technology.
Yep.
Is that like an engineering kind of degree?
Yep.
Dang. Good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's the nerd side.
So would that make you like an architect? No, not really an architect.
Engineer. Like, once engineer. I'm done, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to combine technology and education in that way because everything's going online. And I also think design thinking has some really interesting aspects that you can take and apply to curriculum development. So that's really what I want to get into.
Yeah, well, that's a big thing for me because that was my big, personally anyway, what I really learned as a graduate student coming through my doctoral degree was institutional management, curriculum design, and things like that. And we talked about that when we first met. Because that's an ever-changing thing, right? What's popular now is not popular tomorrow and so on and so on. But in the end, it's all about teaching people the most efficient way we can at their level. You know, that's really what education, I think, needs to be for people. What does that mean in Dutch? I don't mean to
telkommer. Oh, it means the. De is the. And then taal is language.
Oh.
And then kamer is room, but it's closer to chamber. So chamber in English and kamer are like sort of.
So it basically says like the language room.
Yeah, that's us.
Oh, well, that makes tons of sense. All right. So look, this is Education Live Thursday. A little bit different this week, but a great conversation. Thank you so much, Catherine. I really appreciate it. I'm hoping the you know our listeners out there let's there you go, the international language here. Let's hear a big hand here. I appreciate you coming on. I'm sure everybody else does as well. I hope maybe we'll get you back on in a little while when things settle down, and you know we can talk about some of the ideas you have and how you're helping people, and we'll go from there. So. Let me wrap this up. Steve Green, Education Live Thursday. We're here every week. I got to be honest. I got so wrapped up in this conversation. I forgot to even mention who's going to be here next week. It is my friend. Is it Jerry Gross or Ken Myers? I think it's Jerry Gross. Financial guy. If you are concerned about getting your kid through college, it's too expensive. You want to save some money? This is what you want to listen to. This guy's all about teaching people how to save money on college, how to save the right way, how to do things like that. Following week, another one of my buddies, great guy, Ken Myers, Apex Leadership, leadership skills. Talk generating next generation's leaders today in the schools, integrating that into schools, and helping your schools raise money at the same time. The following week is Thanksgiving. It's American. So yeah, you probably don't celebrate that in Holland, but that's okay. So we're going to take that week off. I'm giving myself a week off after about 32 weeks straight of this. I'm going to try to rest one night. Hopefully everybody will allow that. Last thing here, you want to say in Dutch or something? Like, I had a fabulous time. Thank you, Steve. Or because that translate? Can you say that in Dutch?
Dank je wel, Steven. Ik vond het super fijn om hier aanwezig te zijn.
Ah, there you go. I cannot top that. We're going to end right there. Danke, Sharon.
Thank you.
And,
thank you for
thank
having
you
me.
Thank you again. My pleasure. I'd love to have you back again. See you next time.
See you. Bye.
You've been listening to Make the Grade with the Success Doctor, Stephen Green. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe. For more resources and support, please visit makethegrade.net.